listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
Yeah, that's how we're opening the show. You got to soak it in, Auburn fans. Soak in the pain. Let Def Leppard sing it for you. Too much heartbreak. That's how we open a tough Monday for Auburn Tigers fans as they may or may not watch the national championship game tonight featuring the Virginia Cavaliers. Some would say are lucky to have made it to this Monday night national championship game, and a tough one. The foul, the double dribble, that's all that anyone is talking about. Oh, by the way, welcome. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. I'm Dalton Orwig and Corey LaBounty in here as always every Monday night at 7 p.m. You can hear the show live online, fmtalk1065.com, and you can catch the podcast at that same location after the show. We load it there. If you missed any of the show and want to go back and listen to it, it'll be right there for your listening pleasure. But the Auburn Tigers finally fall in the Final Four. One game just too close at the end, and catch an unfortunate call, an unfortunate three-point foul call. And we'll get to that in a minute, but let's run it back and start where Auburn started on Saturday night. Think about how they got to that point there at the end. Again, the underdog against another top-seeded team, just like they were against North Carolina. And even though Kentucky was a two-seed, you were still looking at that underdog role for the Auburn Tigers. But this time had the game just ripped from their hands at the last second. Didn't get much help from Jared Harper or Bryce Brown there in the first half of the game on Saturday night. They didn't really need it, though. Took a three-point lead into halftime, 31-28. But just looking at those two guys and their stats in that first half, Corey, Brown 1-for-4 with 2 assists and 2 rebounds, and Harper had 4 points with an assist, a rebound, and 2 turnovers that had points going the other way. I think 5 points off of those 2 turnovers. Instead, you had Anthony McElmore and Samir Dowdy coming through for Auburn in that first half. McElmore had 7 points and 6 rebounds, and Dowdy with 7 points and 4 rebounds. Seemed to me like Virginia was doing their best to take away Brown and Harper in the first half.
You know, that's what they wanted to do. Anytime you have elite scorers, and Bryce Brown is one of those all-time Auburn favorites, they're talking about possibly retiring his jersey after it's all said and done with because of him and his ability to be a leader and make all those three-pointers. But Dalton, Virginia did a good job of shutting those and containing those two guards down. But with that being said, again, it's just another one of those Auburn games to where Auburn still was up by 3 at halftime and unfortunately came out and was flat to start the second half. But again, with your two leading scorers, you had to have, with Okiki out, Chuma Kiki being injured, you had to have someone else to step up if Harper and Brown were going to struggle, and that's exactly what happened for the Auburn Tigers in the first half.
Yeah, if McElmore and Dowdy hadn't been there for the team, they'd probably been looking at maybe a 10-point deficit going into halftime as well as those guys were playing. And by the way, coming up next segment, we're talking to former Auburn Tiger Mac McGadney, played for Auburn 98 through 01 or 02, part of that 99 team that went to the Sweet 16 and won the SEC regular season. But coming out of the half on Saturday night, you're right, Virginia went on a run. I think they went on an 8-point run, ended up with a 10-point lead by about 5 minutes left in the game. And that's when the defense there for Auburn locked down and Bryce Brown got to work. 3 three-pointers in 2.5 minutes, and Auburn retook the lead. But then you have that missed free throw by Harper there with 7 seconds when Virginia was trying to stretch the game out and find a way back in. So Virginia had that one more chance, and with 1.5 seconds left to play, the foul call heard around the nation.
So here we go. Jerome to inbound.
Oh, they got the lob.
Looking. It's Guy from the corner for the win. Hold on. Did I hear a whistle?
Wow.
We got a foul call.
Wow.
The Auburn fans thought it was over, but there was a whistle.
That was the call from CBS on Saturday night. Now, Corey, you'll tell me what you thought about the call. I think Dowdy clearly got Guy with the hip on his way up, but also think Guy did a great job selling that contact, almost Reggie Miller-esque, flipping that left leg out there. But why make that call after this game where they were calling hardly anything? I was seeing three-pointers where hands were getting slapped right after the ball was released, all kinds of contact. I've never seen a game where both teams in the final minute had to foul three or four times just to get into the bonus. Usually it's neither team, they're already in the bonus with like halfway through the second half, or maybe you've got one team that has to foul two or three times to get into the bonus. But with both teams having to foul three or four times just to get into the bonus, it's clear that the referees were calling that game really lightly, and I was fine with it. It seemed like they wanted to see the best team come out and win. They didn't want to take too much control over the game. But to make that call at that crucial point, it confounds me.
I thought it was a great call, Dalton. I mean, you have to stay away from that shooter. It's okay to close out to the shooter, but you have to let the airborne shooter be able to come down. So I don't have a problem with the foul call. You look at the situation in the game, 12 fouls were called against Auburn, 12 fouls were called against Virginia. So that part was even, and the last foul's what hurts the most if you're an Auburn Tiger fan, and it'll go down as history as one of the most questionable and debatable endings to a Final Four contest that you'll ever see. And I think it's magnified because Auburn was and did make history and had an opportunity to punch their ticket to win the national championship game. Now, with that being said, again, Dalton, yes, it was a foul on Samir Dowdy. And you can't question that. But Guy had to go to the free throw line and knock down all three of those free throws.
And he was ice cold.
If he misses one of those, we're in a situation, the worst case scenario, we're going to play for overtime. Because three coming out of a timeout, they tried to ice him, did not work. So we knew he was going to be a huge factor in the game. And to be on that stage in front of 70,000 plus and under those circumstances to where Auburn's fans are continuing to boo and to cheer and Virginia's fans are sitting on their hands, he knocked down all three of them with a lot of confidence. So I don't have a problem with the foul call at the end. Prior to, I do have a problem with the lack of the double dribble being called.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in a minute. I have Seth Greenberg from Saturday night going over that call. And I know you're a referee's guy, and I've always been one to say you can't complain about foul calls. If that's your reason for saying that you lost the game, you had 40 minutes.
Yep.
You had 40 minutes to get ahead and not worry about that kind of thing. But I just think to take it out of the players' hands in that moment, and this is my theory. So James Breeding was the guy that made the call. I think if this had turned out another way, if you had Auburn missing a two-point shot at the end of the shot clock, let's just say it went that way. Auburn has a two-point lead and miss a two-point shot. Virginia gets the rebound with 7 seconds left and goes down the court. I don't think the referee makes that call. I think there's no stop in the action. They're just going to let things roll. But I think with the fouls and with that final timeout, and you get an inbound play with 1.5 seconds, everybody in the nation that's watching this game, everybody in the arena, every player, every coach, and every referee knows that it comes down to this one play. And I bet you James Breeding was standing there on the baseline saying, no matter what happens, I am not going to screw this up.
You don't want to blame.
I am not going to be the guy that gets made fun of on Twitter. I'm going to call this to the best of my ability. And I think he saw the foul. And Dowdy did bump Guy, and he made the call. But my problem is, if you're not calling it like that the whole game, you can't make that call in the final second and a half. You got to let them play the way you've been letting them play the entire game. And I saw plenty more egregious fouls than that the rest of the game that weren't being called. So everybody's going to have an opinion on whether that should have been a foul, should have been called a foul or not. I think it's pretty certain that he did bump him with his hip. And I think Guy did a fantastic job selling it because I don't think he got hit nearly as hard as he made it appear. But back to that double dribble, which everybody now is saying should have been called.
Sure.
But at the time, it didn't seem like anybody knew.
Nobody picked up on it.
Nobody had any idea. Bruce Pearl, even though I think he said after the game that he did realize it, he sure wasn't acting like he knew it was a double dribble when the call was made. Here's Seth Greenberg after the game talking about that double dribble.
The official absolutely kicked that call. That was right in front of him. You can pick up a fumble, but you cannot dribble a fumble. The game would have been over. They kicked the call on the double dribble.
Yeah, I also think they missed on that inbounds play. If you watch it closely and they set up that screen with Hunter to get Guy loose in the corner, guy clearly shoves Doughty before he heads through the screen. So, I mean, if you're going to call one call in the corner and you're going to call that a foul, I guess were their eyes not on Guy when he shoved Doughty to get past the screen? There's all kinds of ways you can nitpick this game.
Sure.
And that's why this one call has been such a big deal with 1.5 seconds left to play, letting him shoot three. But you're right. Nothing to take away from Kyle Guy. He stood up there. He got to the line. Did he hit the rim?
He did hit the rim.
Okay.
On one of them.
Okay.
On one out of
the
three.
But he was flush on most of those shots. And this wasn't the first time in the tournament we saw this. We actually saw it in an Auburn game, that first game against New Mexico State. The same exact thing happened in the opposite corner. You had a New Mexico State guy shoot a three. I don't know if the three would have gotten them to overtime or would have won it for him.
Would have won the game.
But he only made one of the three, and Auburn ended up escaping with that one. You saw the same thing with Tennessee against Iowa, I think.
Purdue.
No, Purdue. You're right. Tennessee against Purdue, and a foul call on Lamonte Turner in that same corner on the opposite side of Guy from Saturday night, and Purdue sank those free throws, got it into overtime, and ended up winning that game. So it wasn't the first time, but it was the biggest stage that we saw this. And I want to get your take too tonight. 3430106, was it a foul? And even if it was, should it have been called there at the end of the game? Did the refs completely botch that one? We know they botched the double dribble, but did you notice that there was a double dribble as it happened? 717 here, Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. When we get back, we're talking with Mac McGadney, former Auburn Tiger. I'm sure that he has felt this pain before. I'm sure he was feeling pain on Saturday night for his alma mater. And, Corey, is he in Minneapolis? Do you know?
He was there. He was at the game, and now he's made his way back home.
All right, we'll get a first person account from a former player, Mac McGadney, when we get back. Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty with you.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty in with you on this Monday night. National Championship night in the NCAA tournament. And it's a pleasure to be joined by Mac McGadney, former Auburn Tiger. He opened with a War Eagle when we called to get him on the phone, and I'm sure he'll open with a War Eagle once we pot these phone lines up here. Thanks for joining us tonight, Mac.
Hey, Dalton, well, thanks for having me. Corey, thanks for having me also. And there's always going to be a War Eagle, guys. I bleed orange and blue, and this setback isn't getting the Auburn family down. We're here to build on it.
I tell you what, Mac, what a tremendous run by the Auburn Tigers. I had the privilege of going up to Auburn with you in January when they played the Georgia Bulldogs, and it was commemorating the 20th year reunion of the great 1999 team that you played on, that was the last SEC regular season championship team that Auburn took part in. And it was a team that, you know, made it very far in the NCAA tournament. It was no number one overall ranked seed going in. And Mac, back in January, if you would have said that Auburn's ultimate destination would have been the Final Four by seeing them play in January, would you believe that?
I was gonna be honest with you, as being a competitor and an Auburn guy, I'd say no way. No way from what I was seeing. You know, we started out the first game of the SEC season with a win, but from then on we kind of hit a little slow slump. So, you know, we wasn't living up to the expectations that we were, you know, came into the season, you know, projected to be a great ball club. But once the guys start buying in and start really loving and listening to what Coach Pearl had to offer, the sky was the limit. And we got here, we got to the final almost stage to where we were there, but it was taken away.
Mac, sometimes you have these teams that they're on fire throughout the regular season, and sometimes it's a surprise, like Auburn last year, where they ended up winning the regular season title. But how much do you think, because just like last year we saw Auburn fizzle out in the tournament before they really reached their potential, how much do you think struggle and conflict during the regular season helps you once you get into tournament time?
Well, you know, that's a part of life, struggle and conflict. It's all about perseverance, and I think any great ball club would have to persevere through some type of ups and downs in life. I was fortunate enough to be on a team that went into the tournament 29-3, and our last loss was in, unfortunately, we was number one seed. We lost in the Sweet 16 to Scooney Pan and Michael Red of Ohio State, which was a pretty good ball club. But we were beating teams by a margin of 19 points. So we had a high roll. We didn't have too many downs. We had personal downs in our lives personally. But I figure if we would have had a little more trials and tribulations throughout that season, it probably would have had us more prepared for when we went against teams that we weren't necessarily familiar with.
Now,
so I think really, I really think it really helped this Auburn ball club become a better team and become a more cohesive union.
I agree with you, Mac. And the opportunity to go to Minnesota, you were actually at the game and had an opportunity to be amongst all your Auburn alumnus and former teammates. Tell us about what you saw throughout the game and what your feelings were. I know you had an opportunity to also go to Salt Lake City and get a chance to watch them as well. But you just continued to see this Auburn team improve throughout the year. But going down to this last Virginia game, losing by 1 point, what was your viewpoint?
Well, my viewpoint was I stood up the whole game. I didn't sit down from the tip-off to the end, and I'm upset that I'm sitting down now because I think we still should be playing, but, you know, circumstances didn't work out that way. When I was around the guys in Salt Lake City and in Minnesota, Minneapolis, they were the same guys. They were the same guys. They had the same attitude. It was just another game to the guys, and I think it showed by the way they came back down 10 in the second half after having the first half slump. So with that being said, the attitude was still the same. The atmosphere was electric. All the Auburn fans came out in droves, and I really, really appreciate that. I think the guys really appreciate that, also as Coach Pearl. But once it didn't go the way that we thought it should go, the atmosphere changed. And I think anybody who had any sense of the game of basketball would be feeling the same way that the Auburn family was feeling. Even if you are not a fan of the Auburn family, the game that the kids played, we had to feel sorry for the kids because I think they played the game the right way. And I think the game was coached the right way, but it just so happened that the call didn't go our way. But we live from it.
Speaking of that call, Mac, we got to get to that foul call there at the end of the game.
Let's talk about it.
I know Bruce Pearl over the last couple of days, he's been saying exactly what you want to hear your head coach say. He's been saying, get over it. We had opportunities to win the game. Referees are human, just like the rest of us. There's things we could have done, and they just I still think Bruce Pearl thinks that they should not have made that final call, but he's not going to say it in public. But that's why we're here, and that's why we have you on the radio, to get your honest opinion. With the way that the referees called that entire game, to take it out of the players' hands, I mean, it was still in Kyle Guy's hands. He still had to make those three free throws. But your take on that final call with that 1.5 seconds left to play?
Well, I really appreciate you mentioning Coach Pearl. What Coach Pearl is doing and how he's handling that situation is only teaching his kids and any kids, Mike's younger kids, to become better men and better people in society, not to blame other people for, you know, misfortunes that happen in life. And I can only say high praises for Bruce. But with that being said, it was a foul. It was a foul, in my opinion. I think I know the argument here. I think if me as a competitor, if I'm playing a pickup game 5-on-5 and Cal Guy was that guy shooting that three-pointer, and I closed out, I clipped him on the leg. I had to check the ball up again, the ball. He has to shoot free throws on that. But with that being said, if the referees were going to be consistent, let's keep it consistent. Let's not have the 1.6 seconds aside the fact of this game when you wasn't calling the same fouls when Kyle Guy was shooting the same exact identical shot the whole game.
We're speaking with Mac McGadney. He played his high school ball at LaFleur High School and decided to take his talents to Auburn University and was on a historic Auburn team his freshman year and really had a lot of success the entire time that he was at Auburn. And I know he said at the beginning he bleeds orange and blue. But, Mac, when you look back and you take a step back, and Dalton and I had this discussion a couple of weeks ago about what was the greatest Auburn team ever? And I personally thought that your team was the best Auburn team ever. Now this Auburn team has made it to the Final Four. They punched their ticket in history. The only other step that Auburn basketball can take now is to play in a national championship game. Talk to us about the future and what you see in Coach Pearl and what he's bringing not only to the university but the community as well.
Well, what I say in Coach Pearl is a genuine guy. And I think that part would get any player to play for him and will do anything to win. Just from him and the way he treats his people, the way he treats the community, the way he's a people person, anyone on this planet. He is more than willing to have a conversation with you. He never shunned me, never turned anyone in my family away. So with a guy like that, I wish I still had eligibility so I can come and reclassify and play for Auburn, because he's a player's coach. Players want to play for him. And with that being said, I don't see why recruits do not want to build on this momentum that Auburn's having now and saying we're more than a football school. We do play basketball down on the plains, and I think the world is taking notice now with Coach Pearl at the helm.
Without question, Mac. I know you get in the gym and you like to play a little pickup, and I've seen you shoot, and I know you still have it, and I know you've had an opportunity to scrimmage with those guys, have a chance to bump and grind with Austin Wiley in the post and Horace Spencer and a couple of the other guys. But what impressed you the most about this Auburn Tiger team this year?
Oh, it has to be not selfish. It has to be wanting to make the extra pass. It has to be these guys playing for each other. It has to be when Okiki went down. You had to know that touched me personally. Because you remember my junior year, if anybody recalls, I had the same ACL injury, averaging 20 and 10 as a junior. So to see a team rally around an injured soldier, a fallen soldier, and keep persevering and keep playing as a unit. Not at any time Harper could have said, I want to take over. At any time Brown could have said, I want to take over. But they stayed as one and made the extra passes. So the unselfishness in a team, that would really impress me about this team.
I don't know if you saw the end of the game. They slowed McLemore's free throws down, and right before he made those two crucial shots that put Auburn up by four, I think, with about 20 seconds to play, he said, for Chuma. You could see it when they slowed the camera down for Chuma right before he rang both of those. Now, to play a little revisionist history, I think Chuma Okiki was the best player on the Auburn Tigers, at least the last quarter of the season. He was everywhere. He was knocking balls away. He was hitting threes. He was driving to the rim. If he didn't go down there at the very end of that game, do you think this is different? Do you think Auburn's playing in the game tonight?
Well, I don't think I would say yes, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree with me, because Okiki was playing some of the best ball of his life, and he kept getting better every game, every practice, every shoot around. You see growth, and for that, for a young guy, a sophomore to keep building and keep building, and for an unfortunate injury to happen, It has to touch people's hearts, and it hurts me, because I, 20 years ago or 19 years ago, was that guy who was trying to do the right thing, who was trying to just play the game the right way, and unfortunately, an injury struck. But with the Auburn family around Okiki, there's no doubt that he'll get through this, and he'll be a better player coming in the next year.
Well, what's it like to recover from an injury like that? I mean, you got such a great fan base surrounding you. You had a great coach with you. He's got a great coach with him, great teammates. How much does that help you when you're recovering from just a devastating injury like that?
Well, definitely. I know I'm going to just speak from my point. From me coming up with, you know, single-parent household, grandma dying as a freshman, and then from there I had no really parental guys to lean on. The Auburn family was my parent. The Auburn family was my family. So when I say Okiki is in one of the best situations in the country, even though he's hurt, and God bless him for that, but the support staff that he's going to receive on that campus, the medical staff, it's going to be the top-notch program. So I have no doubt in my mind that Okiki is going to come back stronger than ever. And when I talk to him, he can lean on me at any time, because I have walked in these exact same shoes.
That's some great news, and I know Bruce Pearl appreciates alumni like you that are willing to come back and give your assistance to these young guys, and certainly some of them need that guidance at times. I don't know if you've had time, if you've been able to recover from that Auburn game to take a look at the matchup tonight with Virginia and Texas Tech. We got a close line on the game. I think Virginia is a one-point favorite right now. Who are you feeling? Who do you think walks away with the championship tonight?
Well, I'm only talking as a competitor to Auburn, fam. I'm not talking as Auburn guy here. I'm talking as a competitor. I really like Texas Tech's chances in this game for that length and for that defensive prowess. But with Virginia running this slow type of ball and then being able to hit tough shots at the end, if they're making these tough shots, I think Virginia's going home as national championship. Right?
Well, I tell you what, Mac McGadney, number 31, doesn't get any better than that. You know, you're my best friend, and I appreciate you for joining us tonight on Sports Night. And it's always a privilege to talk with you anytime we can reach out and talk with one another, and especially talk Auburn hoops. It's always a pleasure.
Well, you know, I really appreciate you guys having me on. And like I said, hey, Auburn family, let's keep our heads high. Let's keep yelling War Eagle, because we'll be back here soon.
All right. Thank you, Mac.
All right. War Eagle to you.
That's Mac McGadney. Started it with a War Eagle and ended the interview with a War Eagle. That guy is Auburn through and through. And a pleasure to talk to him. Some great insight from a former Auburn Tiger, talking about the heartbreak from Saturday night and giving his take on tonight's game. So looking forward to the game tonight. An 8:20 p.m. start our time. Hopefully I can stay awake I'm going to have to write about it for the morning show tomorrow, but hopefully I can stay awake. I'm sure I will. Drinking a Red Bull right now. When we come back, we will break down the national championship a little bit more in detail, and tons of coaching movement in the SEC now that the season has ended for all the teams. You got coaches moving in, coaches potentially moving out, still on Tennessee watch, still on Rick Barnes watch right now. He might be heading out to UCLA. They said they were expecting a decision today, but unless it's happened in the last 10 minutes, so still not seeing anything from that. But we'll break down what Nate Oates has already been able to do at Alabama and some of these new guys that are moving into the Southeastern Conference. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
You heard the man. Call or text the show, 251-343-0106. Getting a couple texts in right now. Go Red Raiders. War Damn Eagle. That's one of the texts we've got. Also, they should not have called the foul. They weren't calling it all game long. What's your thoughts? 251-343-0106. Until then, we'll foray into the national championship game set for tonight. As badly as we wanted the Auburn Tigers to be in there. And I can't speak, you know, I thought a lot of Alabama fans were coming over. They were like, you know, we had no shot at winning the national championship this year. And normally I hate Auburn with all my heart, speaking as an Alabama fan would speak right now. But a lot of Alabama fans liked the energy, liked what Bruce Pearl was bringing to the state, what the team was bringing to the state, and were actually rooting for Auburn to make it through. Whether they're just a big SEC fan or they just wanted to see the state win another national championship, I'm not sure. I'd like to see the breakdown of how many Alabama fans were pulling against and pulling for Auburn the other night. More than likely, a majority didn't even tune in or care about the game because Alabama wasn't involved. But it seemed to me like a lot of Alabama fans said, hey, we'll pull for Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting split. I saw the 50-50 split on my Twitter feed, and you have those diehard Alabama fans who didn't want any part of anything Auburn does, whether it's equestrian, whether it's golf, whether it's tennis, basketball, football. If you're an Auburn fan, there's a lot of Alabama fans who don't want to see them win at anything. On the other side of that, there were those who definitely said, okay, this is basketball. Alabama, the state of Alabama is being represented. Bruce Pearl's done a wonderful job the way that they've been able to beat all the blue bloods of college basketball. Mm-hmm. I mean, because again, you look at it, Kansas goes down, North Carolina goes down, Kentucky goes down. It doesn't get any bigger than that. That was historical of itself. But I just think that Auburn fans, I tip my cap to them. Alabama fans who rooted for Auburn, I tip my cap to them. I was one of those guys that was pulling for the state of Alabama. I wanted to see Auburn do well and play in the national championship game, and it was going to be interesting to see if they could make it there. But just because they didn't, they still had a tremendous season. And I tell you what, the state of Alabama basketball, Auburn's state of basketball right now is a lot better than Alabama's. So you can't take anything away from that.
You're not the only Alabama fan that was pulling for Auburn. Got another on the text line. Alabama fan pulled for Auburn. They got hosed. Seems to be a common sentiment right now, 2 days after the game. So instead of Auburn, we got number one seed Virginia, number three seed Texas Tech taking each other on tonight. I would imagine the Red Raiders gained a whole lot of fans in Alabama after the way that game ended on Saturday. But you got Virginia favored by 1.5 points tonight. And the total, actually, it was as low as 117.5 at one point. I think it's back up to 119. That's the lowest in a title game I can ever remember. I mean, we're talking about a 60-60 game tonight would put that over. That is a low-scoring game.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dalton, when you're giving up 55.8 points per game, which is Texas Tech, that's what Coach Beard and his team is giving up. On the other hand, Virginia giving up 58.6. You know you're going to have a low-scoring game. And I say a low-scoring game, you could have teams to come out and be on fire tonight and mm-hmm. really struggle. But I do expect it to be, you know, right around both teams combined, look, probably right at 62 to 58, something like that. A very close game. It's going to be an outstanding game. Look forward to watching it. And, you know, you look at this Texas Tech team, Dalton, 31-6 on the season. Virginia comes in at 34-3. But Virginia.
And all three losses to Duke, right?
No question. But you look at Virginia's season a year ago. You're a one seed, and you lose historically to a 16 seed. Okay, that had never happened in the history of the NCAA tournament. And then 1 year later, with eight guys returning, you're able to make it all the way to the national championship game. And people forget Texas Tech made it to the Elite Eight last year. Mm-hmm. So this is a team that's not struggling either. So these are two teams that are going to cut down. One of these teams are going to cut down the net for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, you got your Krzyzewskis, you got your Calipari's, you got your Bailines, but these two coaches tonight are probably the two hottest young names in college basketball right now, Chris Beard and Tony Bennett. And that Wolfpack defense with Tony Bennett that his dad actually began, Dick Bennett. And I was kind of rooting for a Michigan State-Virginia game if we couldn't get Auburn there in the final, because Dick Bennett, when he was coaching back in 2000, actually took his team to the national championship, and it was none other than Tom Izzo's Michigan State Spartans that knocked him out. So as far as storylines go, I kind of wanted to see Tony Bennett get a shot at the guy that took his dad out from the national championship. But these two teams, the two coaches, Chris Beard and Bennett, hottest names right now out there in college basketball. And Texas Tech, they really have that Auburn effect going on right now. I mean, they're hot right now. Nobody was talking about them making it this far going into the tournament. I know a lot of people had them making it to the Elite Eight, Final Four. I had them in the Final Four, not because I thought they'd get there. I just didn't think very many people would pick them to make it into the Final Four. But they've won and covered every single game that they've played in the tournament. In their last three, they were underdogs, of course, against Michigan, Gonzaga, and Michigan State. And if you ask me, those three teams were probably top 15 teams in the tournament, and they beat them back to back to back, Michigan, Gonzaga, and Michigan State. So tonight I'm riding the Red Raiders wave. I think they'll be able to get it done and continue this little upset line they've got going.
Texas Tech has won a national championship, Dalton, but guess what?
What's that?
It was in women's basketball. Cheryl Swoops was able to cut down the nets for the Red Raiders, and that's a situation that a lot of people have forgot. So Nate Oates, the new Alabama head coach, Texas Tech met them in the second round, and they defeated Buffalo 78-58. Mm-hmm. And I know Coach Oates, you know, he was known for his defensive prowess and his ability to score on offense and spread the floor. But Texas Tech and this defense, they just are too stingy, and they don't want to give up anything.
They're just so long and so athletic, and it starts there at the top with Culver. Jarrett Culver, he is, 6'6", and he's bringing the ball down the court every time. I mean, he looks like he's about 160 pounds, but he's so long and lanky, and he's not the only one on the team. I mean, if they stand on the baseline, hand-to-hand, outstretched, I bet the five of them could reach from one side to the other. That's how long their arms are. And as far as coaching goes, the reason you know that this Chris Beard is such a good coach is because of those halftime adjustments. I think that's what really makes a good coach, whether it's basketball or football. You see how they respond once they get into halftime, kind of able to look at their bearings and figure out what they're doing as a team that's working and not working. And if you look at the second half of their last three games against those teams, Michigan, Gonzaga, and Michigan State, Texas Tech has won the second half, 39-28. They won that second game against Gonzaga in the second half, 40-32. And then they outscored Michigan State on Saturday, 38-30. So it'll be a fascinating matchup tonight. Beard versus Bennett, Tech versus Michigan State, versus Virginia. I think it'll be outstanding, and I think it'll be a little bit more high scoring than people are expecting.
You mentioned Culver. Culver leads Texas Tech at 18.6 points per game, leads them in rebounds at 6.3 points per game, and is their leading assist at 3.7 assists per game also. So that dynamic in and of itself speaks on to his ability to play the game. But I just think that if you are an old school guy and love the game of basketball, play the old school way, you'll love tonight's defensive standpoint. I mean, they say defense wins championships and offense sells tickets. So I know there were a lot of tickets that were sold tonight to the Final Four championship game, but at the same time, defense is ultimately what's going to get you where you need to be, and it's what Texas Tech has hung their hat on this whole season.
Tell us who you think is going to win tonight, 251-343-0106. You can text or call that number. Lots of coaches in the SEC looking at these two teams tonight and saying, that's where I want to be next year. This is where I want to get my team. I want to get them into the Final Four. I think it's coming up in New Orleans either next year or the year after that. The Final Four will be down here, and hopefully get some tickets to that. That ought to be outstanding. And with the way the SEC is trending, wouldn't be a surprise to see one or two teams from the SEC in the Final Four from here on out, depending on how things go. But the reason I say that is because used to be whenever a coach opening would have come open in the SEC, you wouldn't see these big up-and-coming names. You'd have some guys that would make their name in the SEC and then move on to bigger and better schools, but you wouldn't see these coaches who have been super successful sign the dotted line at SEC schools just because it wasn't considered a basketball conference. And we're still waiting right now to see whether Rick Barnes leaves Tennessee for UCLA after he just signed that contract extension at the beginning of this year. I know UCLA offered him $5 million, but he's a guy who just a couple years ago, after he was released from Texas, I mean, he recruited Kevin Durant. He had outstanding teams at Texas. His knock has always been that he's not a tournament coach, though, and we saw that happen again this year with a super athletic team in Tennessee that was expected to go a lot further than they did in the Sweet 16. But you had Tom Crean come to Georgia after those years with Marquette in Indiana, and after a trying year this year, I think he's going to start to figure it out, especially as he gets some recruits in. You have Avery Johnson, who was supposed to be that guy for Alabama, but after 4 years of those mediocre results, the Bama fans kind of had enough of that. They said, all right, we're ready to move on, get some new blood in here, and see if we can do what Bruce Pearl is doing on the other side of the state. Arkansas made a big splash yesterday, bringing in Eric Musselman to replace Mike Anderson. If you don't know who Musselman is, he led Nevada, which is a basketball school out there in the Midwest Conference, led them to a 110-34 record and three consecutive Mountain West Conference titles in 4 years. And before he took over at Nevada, they had 9 wins. He took them to 24 in his first season. He's going to be outstanding.
He's a guy this area should know. I mean, you look at Bill Musselman, the former head coach at South Alabama.
That's right.
Minnesota Timberwolves head coach. This is his son, Eric Musselman, who's getting it done and coming to the SEC, Dalton. So many new adjustments, and I know you're going to go on to talk about Texas A&M
yep.
having a new coach as well. Just so many new faces that will be in the SEC. That's 1/4 of the SEC. LSU, we're still waiting on Will Wade mm-hmm. to see what his coaching situation is going to wind up being. So they may go in a different direction or probably going to have to go in a different direction.
Yeah, because it's an ugly situation right now in Baton Rouge, and even if he does come back, is he going to be able to recruit at the same level that he has the last couple years when clearly something was going on? If you take that call that he had with Javonte Smart, if you think that was the only one he made, you're probably wrong.
No, I think the LSU Tigers are going to be in a little trouble and have to look somewhere else for a new head coach. And Jerry Stackhouse taking over at Vanderbilt. That's a name that's kind of interesting also.
What are your thoughts on that? Because I follow a lot of people in Tennessee. I know your mom is a Vanderbilt alum. And letting go of Bryce Drew, probably the right move. You can't go winless in the SEC and lose your last 20 games. And actually, Stackhouse was interviewed about that today. He said, I promise you, if I lose 20 games in a row, I'll jump off Memorial Gym. So he took it to another extreme. But only 2 years as a head coach in the NBA G League, 18 years as an NBA vet, though. Is he gonna be better than Bryce Drew? I mean, he's got to take that Penny Hardaway role in that.
He's definitely going to have. He's going to have to hire some strong assistant coaches, and that's going to be the thing. There's a big difference between G League basketball and SEC basketball, and I think until he learns it and learns his team personnel, it's going to be a struggle for Vanderbilt. I was shocked by the hire, to be honest with you.
Well, SEC should be just outstanding to watch over the next decade. Hopefully, they keep growing in this projection that they've been going in with four teams in the Sweet 16 this year. And all these new coaches coming in. We'll see if Rick Barnes sticks around to Tennessee. I have a feeling if he doesn't, they're just going to go down the road and hire that guy from Lipscomb University who almost won the NIT title this year. But we don't get to talk basketball that much. We've talked it a lot over the last few weeks, especially with Auburn's success. Coming up in the next segment, we're moving on to football, Corey. A-Day. Alabama and Auburn spring practice in front of the fans this Saturday. We're going to break down some of the position battles, what you need to watch for in these games, and what's important. What's that?
congratulations to the Baylor Bears. Mulkey and them getting it done last night, winning the women's national championship over Notre Dame in an outstanding play contest. A one-point game goes in favor of Baylor Bears. Kim Mulkey wins her third national championship at Baylor.
That's outstanding. First in 7 years, and they had a 17-point lead and almost let it slip away. Ogbuwanle, is that how you say the name? Notre Dame, she's just an outstanding player, and she almost brought them all the way back. But some good basketball, women's and men's tournament has been outstanding to watch this year. All right, coming back, we're talking A-Day Auburn and Alabama football. No one's been talking Auburn football with the way the basketball team's going, but we're about to right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead, this is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
I got those summer vibes going on in the Sports Night FM Talk 106.5 studios right now. About that time. Going to really heat up from here on out. And that means football. Football practice. Got baseball going on right now, but spring practice all around the SEC and the rest of the nation. Thank you to Mac McGadney, former Auburn Tiger, for coming on with us earlier. He was there in Minneapolis for that Final Four game on Saturday night. And remember that 1999 Auburn Tigers team that won the SEC. Just an outstanding team. I think 11 losses for them that year, or maybe less, but a really good team. Thank you to Mac for coming on. You can follow me on Twitter, at Dalton Orwig. Corey, where can they find you?
C.A. LeBounty. C.A. LeBounty. You can follow me on Twitter.
I've been so enthralled with the NCAA tournament that outside of kind of checking in on spring practice and seeing where things lie at Auburn and Alabama, I haven't really been following the news cycle very closely. So, Corey, when you brought up this story to me, this was news. But apparently Nick Saban and a former player have been getting into it, maybe not physically, maybe actually not even talking face-to-face. But Nick Saban was asked the other day about underclassmen entering the NFL draft, and sometimes entering the NFL draft when Nick Saban feels like they're not ready to do so.
I am 100% NFL. I'm 100% guys having careers. All right, but people have to be smart about the business decisions they make relative to the NFL, because it is all business. And when people make emotional decisions, they're going to have to suffer some really difficult consequences for their self in the future.
Yeah, I got my cuts backwards there, but this is where Saban was kind of leading off with the stats of how players do when they leave early.
I do know there's some pretty compelling stats out there about guys going out early for the draft. I think in the last 5 years, not counting this year, there's been 380 players or thereabouts go out early for the draft, and 25% of those guys didn't even get drafted. And another 25% weren't on a team in 3 years. So that means 50% of the guys that went out early for the draft had failed careers. But if you look at the number of guys that were first and second round draft picks, there were very few guys that had failed careers. Now we have guys that have no draft grades, seventh round grades, free agent grades, fifth round grades that are going out for the draft. And, you know, the person that loses in that is the player.
So you're thinking, yeah, Nick Saban, of course he wants to. If he could keep all of his underclassmen there until they graduate as seniors, of course he would want to do that. He's the coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. He's not the coach of an NFL team. But I also think that Nick Saban has his players' interests in mind. I think he truly cares about these guys as men and what they go on to do later in life. But Ronnie Harrison, a former Alabama player who was drafted in the third round?
Yes.
Third round by the Jacksonville Jaguars, and actually got an interception against my Tennessee Titans at one point last year. I think that's the picture that AL.com decided to use of him, so that was great for me to see. But Ronnie Harrison apparently took personal issue with what Nick Saban said, and he tweeted, "Coaches get so butthurt nowadays about a kid making a decision to live out his dreams and go pro. Makes me think, do you really care about the success of the kid, or do you care about how well your program is performing?" Corey, your thoughts on this?
You know, I think that there's obviously some type of beef between Ronnie Harrison and Coach Saban when Ronnie decided to come out. I understand Ronnie comes from a situation to where his base salary in 2018 was $480,000. Well, that's a heck of a lot more money that he would have made than staying at the University of Alabama and playing for the Alabama Crimson Tide. He can always go back and get that degree, and that's the angle that Saban slanted it towards, to where now when he goes to recruit a young man, he wants to tell them there's life after football. But I tell you, life during football. $480,000 guaranteed for Harrison this year. Next year, $617,000. And then in 2020, he's scheduled to make $708,000. That's guaranteed base salary, Dalton. I'm coming out too. Yeah. I don't care if I'm a third round draft pick.
That's big money. And we've seen third rounders fail, and we've seen them do well in the NFL. Ronnie Harrison appears to be on the good track. He's on a great defense down there in Jacksonville. I'm sure Nick Saban's not going to let this bridge burn. It'll have to be Ronnie Harrison determined to burn a bridge between him and Nick Saban. So I expect this to get settled behind closed doors or closed tweets, however you want to bring it up. But regardless, Nick Saban has a team to coach, and you got Alabama preparing for A-Day this Saturday. The quarterback is set. The wide receivers are set. The running backs are pretty well set with Najee Harris and that hot new freshman coming in who says he's going to win the Heisman. But the offensive line, that's a question. Ross Pierce-Baker and Jonah Williams, how are they going to replace them? How do you think this O-line is going to look, Corey?
I think it's going to be a situation to where it'll take a couple of games until they gel. The fall practice is ultimately where they're going to get after it and become better and become that meshed unit that they want to ultimately be when they open up against Duke. So, again, I think that Coach Saban's going to get it done. A new staff, a new situation. Had an opportunity to see them this past week up close and personal, and trust me, they're going to be just fine.
The question with Alabama on defense is the same it is every year. You got so much talent leaving for the NFL, but this year it seems extra. Like, you got extra talent leaving. Quinnen Williams, Isaiah Bugs, Mac Wilson, Christian Miller, Deontay Thompson, Savion Smith, all these guys have to be replaced, especially there at middle linebacker. They're worried about the depth. Iabi Anoma, he's the name to look out for, I think.
Him and Dylan Moses, I think those are going to be the two that are going to be critical for this Alabama defense. And on the back end, you have a lot of experienced players, Cheyenne Cunningham coming back. 1 o'clock kickoff is the 8A for Alabama time, so it's going to be interesting to see on ESPN2 how they react to one another. What can they build off on going into the summer and spring, finishing up spring.
Then out on the plains, we got a quarterback battle. That's the main thing that people are focused on at Auburn. They also have their A-Day this Saturday, and you can hear that right here on FM Talk 106.5. I think that the broadcast starts at 3 p.m. I think that's about when it'll start, but you have the practice going on, and it seems like that quarterback battle down to two names right now, and two really talented, highly recruited guys. Joey Gatewood, who redshirted last year, just big and athletic, 6'5", 237 pounds. He can run the ball. He could throw the ball. Looks right now like he is in the lead for that starting position. But then you got Bo Nix, who had an outstanding high school career in Alabama. Was it Pinson Valley that Bo Nix played?
Yes.
He's got the dad with the Auburn roots.
Stan.
And so Bo Nix seems to be the backup right now. And with a big game to open the season against Oregon in Arlington, you'd have to think that Gus Malzahn's going to go with what's familiar. And now that Malzahn has the reins of the offense, you know that he likes a guy that can run the ball, run those RPO plays, and make things happen with his feet.
Yeah, I think incoming freshmen, the running backs are going to be interesting to me because that's where Auburn struggled. If they run the football well, they're just fine. Boobie Whitlow couldn't stay healthy last year, and Auburn really couldn't get that running game going. So that's going to be a big concern and improvement for the Auburn Tigers also.
But, man, that defense, oh, it looks stacked, especially with Derrick Brown, Marlon Davidson coming back. Most of your secondary should be a great football season. And we've only got 4 months to talk about it before they actually kick off in Arlington. We'll be here every single Monday night. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Coming up, the car show with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton. Get those phones ready with your questions. For Dalton Oregon and Corey LeBounty, we're out. Yes,